This is called shock therapy. Before I get started, I have to mind the copyright laws and thank Newsy.com for the use of their video. Most of the stuff I take is free off of YouTube. This is one that required me to basically let you know where I got it from. I look at the faces. Do those numbers bother you? Does it trouble you to hear those things? Last week, Tim Cole came and spoke from the VEF, and one of the big things they're promoting at ICOM this year is that we're no longer the home team. America has become a mission field. And if you thought inside out this idea of moving the worship service across the street was an event, that's not what we're promoting. See, I'm talking about going inside out. I'm literally talking about turning the way that we do church inside out. And the reason is because, well, news headlines bother us, don't they? I just spent a week down in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and while I was down there, a major event happened, and there was feelings on both sides as they lowered the Confederate flag at the State House, and you know what? There was some brash feelings on both sides as they did that, and it made headlines. People were upset. A few weeks ago, they had the Supreme Court ruling on homosexual marriage, and you know what? Those headlines, they upset us. And you know, there's a headline that maybe you missed. It was out there. It's been about 3 weeks ago when it popped up, and it was connected with this video, and here's what it read. It came from the USA Today, and the headline was, "Christians drop, nuns soar in a new religion portrait." I got to tell you, that headline, it caught my attention. It gave me something to think about. And when I started reading the article that went with it, that came from what is basically a religious organization, the Pew Research Center, the numbers startled me. And in case the video ran too quick for you, let me just run back through some of this religious statistics that they wrote this article off of, because the question becomes, while Christianity is in decline in our country, where are these people going? And I found these statistics just breathtaking, because you know what? Non-Christian religions, well, they're up over that same period, 1.2%. Atheists, now these are people that believe that there is no God, rose from 1.6 to 3.1%, so it's up 1.5%. Agnostics, now these are people that believe that there is a God, but don't believe that there is a possibility of actually forming a relationship with this God. They rose from 2.4% to 4%, up 1.6%. If you begin to add these up, you know that the Christianity drop was about 8%, so you know we've made up for about half of it. The question is, where'd the other half go? Well, here it is. Nuns. They rose from 12.1% to 15.8%. And they call themselves nuns. They call themselves that because they didn't choose to leave Christianity because they went to another faith. They didn't choose to leave Christianity because, well, they don't believe in God anymore. They don't even choose to leave Christianity because they can't figure out how to know God. They are leaving Christianity, well, they've just lost interest. They just decided to go somewhere else. For this growing number of people, well, God isn't dead, but you know what? He's certainly becoming more and more irrelevant, at least in the generation that we're currently looking at. How's my shock therapy working? Do I have your attention? Do you understand that when we say we're going inside out and we want to get out into the world that we're going out into may not be the world that you think is out there. See, going inside out means that, well, 30% of these people, of these nuns, well, 30%, they say religion is important. You get that, right? Less than half of them are even looking anymore. for anything that represents God. This is the world that we now find ourselves living in. See, we're fighting a battle. We're fighting the battle in a quest to become relevant to a generation that maybe we don't understand how to reach them. But I want to give us a little silver star, because you know what? We've tried. We've tried to find ways to make the church relevant. I mean, we've changed music. I mean, here and there, some churches more than others. We've introduced different kinds of music, trying to make it where it's easier for some of the generation to actually come in and feel more comfortable. We've changed dress. I mean, you think about it. A generation ago, the idea of your minister getting up and giving a sermon in a polo shirt and a pair of khakis would have been unheard of. I've got a little book that I got when I went to college, and it tells you how to prepare a sermon. And the first thing they do is the first chapter, believe it or not, is how you dress. And it talks about shining the shoes. I'll be honest with you. I don't own a pair of shoes that you can shine. I just don't have them. So we've changed our dress. We've become more casual again, trying to become relevant, trying to remove barriers. We've changed our methodologies, haven't we? Did you know that 68% of churches in America now have some means to have video, some kind of video representation in their church these days? 68%. Now have screens, and we've gone from hymn books to singing off of screens, and we've changed the way that we are delivering the message, hopefully in trying to make the church relevant. We've changed ministries. There are ministries that were mainstays in churches a generation ago that you just don't see anymore. And nowadays, you have churches that are just adding new ministries. You have churches that are getting into sports programs and churches that are getting into recovery programs and other churches that are going. We're trying to figure out ministries that will make the church relevant. And you know what the problem is? We failed. And the numbers don't lie. We've tried all of these things, and you know what we've gotten from it? We've gotten divisions. Now, not only do we argue about the jots and tittles and the I's dotted and the T's crossed in God's Word, now we sit here and we have arguments about whether or not what's the right way to do church, what's the right way to do this, what's the right kind of music to sing, what's the right kind of dress code to have, what's the right way to, we have all of these arguments, and we are more divided in our churches than we've ever been, simply because we're trying to be relevant. We have distractions. I mean, we're so busy trying to be relevant that we've sort of lost our voice in the middle of all of this. And the message that we're supposed to be putting out there is not very clear anymore because we're just so busy. Have you ever looked at a church calendar? Church people are busy people. We run to this and that and the other, trying to make all these events, trying to make it more relevant for us, and it isn't working. We're just distracted. And let's face it, we've had disappointments from our efforts. I mean, you put all the effort in there, and you put the money out there, and you do the upgrades, and you make it look better, and you think, man, this is what's going to work, and numbers keep going down. We're still struggling. So we get disappointed. And I want to tell you, I think I know what the problem is. See, all of these changes, they're all on the external. We're trying to make ourselves relevant by fixing the wrapper. Now, I want to tell you guys know me. I don't have a problem with screens. I don't have a problem with dress code. I don't have a, you know, we'll take it any way that we can go. We'll use whatever means we can if it means we can reach somebody else. But changing the wrapper isn't going to fix the problem. Because we can't fix that kind of a problem because the world, well, I hate to tell you this, they got bigger budgets than us. And the world is going to keep making the wrapper more shiny and more glittery. And if that's how we think we're going to keep the church relevant, then we're going to keep seeing the numbers go down. See, the problem is we're trying to make God relevant going from the outside working in. We're trying to make God relevant by making him shiny. We're trying to make God relevant by making him attractive. We're trying to make God relevant by saying, hey, look, come and see us. We're just as good as compared to something else. But that's trying to make God relevant from the outside. God's never worked that way. God's never worked on the idea that he is going to be relevant outwardly. He has always been interested in the inward. So now that we know what our problem is, the question becomes, is how are we going to fix it? How are we going to make us, the church, relevant to a generation that honestly, quite honestly, we don't even understand how to speak their language a lot of times? I have a 13-year-old son. Well, he's soon to be 13. And I sit down every now and then and try to watch some of the shows that he watches. And we're pretty strict TV people as far as, you know, we take out the violence and some of the gore. We take out a lot of stuff, and he has a very small list. But even the things that he watches, I sit down and watch them, and I look at them, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't even understand how to speak his language. The kids today, they text, and they use a text language. I got a text from a kid, and I'm like, I had to go get a translator. I don't speak their language. So how on earth can we make our ministries relevant to a new generation? Well, here's the good news. I'd like you to take a look at a relevant story. If you have a copy of God's Word, please turn to Acts chapter 17. So you can follow along. If you don't have a copy with you, there's one in the pew rack right there in front of you. But we're going to be in Acts chapter 17, and we're going to take a look at verses 16 through 34. This is not a verse by verse, otherwise we'd be here for a long time. But I want to take a look at this little set of scriptures, because I think it tells us something about how to make a church relevant in what I am now going to call a hostile culture, where we're not the home team. And so the first thing I want you to see in verse 16 of chapter 17, this is what it says. While Paul was waiting for them, them being his companions, to the other group that he was supposed to meet up with in Athens, he was greatly distressed to see the city was full of idols. He was greatly distressed at this outward problem that everywhere he looked, there was an idol. So, what's an idol? Well, we know what an idol is. You just have to look it up in the dictionary. An idol, well, an idol is quite simply, it's a physical representation of a god, or believe it or not, even God with the big G. It's where we take something that is physical, something that is touchable, something that we can touch, see, smell, taste, and we say, you know what? This is what God is for me. That's what an idol is. Now, in the culture that Paul was in, idols were physical little carved statues that were everywhere. But you know, an idol can be a building. An idol can be a place. An idol can be anything that you think represents God to you. It can be a picture. I mean, don't just take it to the fact that we don't carve little statues, so therefore we're good. Idols are everywhere. Things that we worship because they represent who God is to us. And you know why this bothered Paul, right? Because he was a good little Jewish boy. He knew Exodus chapter 20, verses 4 and 5, and it says, "You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above earth, beneath the waters below. You shall not bow to them or worship them. Idols are forbidden," according to God's law that he gave the Israelites. So Paul's walking around, and he sees all these idols, and he becomes distressed. And while we understand the command, you need to know that, well, idols, they're not really the outside issue. The issue isn't the idol. The issue is the inside issue, which you find in Romans chapter 1, verses 21 through 43. This is what it reads. "For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile and foolish hearts were darkened. Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools. They exchanged the glory of immortal God for images made to look like mortal human beings and birds and animals and reptiles." The idea of an idol begins with a diminished view of who God is. And so they began to carve images, something to remind them who God is. You know, an idol could be a cross, if that's what you start worshiping. See, the essence of religion, it's idols. The essence of what religion tries to do is it tries to make it where, look, just worship this, just focus on this. And it says, you know what? When we start focusing on those things, the wise become fools. So here is Paul standing in this culture. And you know what our inclination would have been, don't you? Let's take the Jesus temple methodology and let's just run around and take all the idols and start smashing them and start standing up on our soapboxes and start telling people how bad it is to worship an idol, how bad it is to do this, how much sin there is doing this. Let's take that approach. But that's not the approach Paul found. Not when he was in this situation. When he found himself outside in the hostile world, he took a much different approach. And that's what I want to focus on. You see, Paul made an outward presentation in Acts chapter 17, verses 17 through 21. So he reasoned in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, and as well as in the marketplace, day by day. You can highlight it there if you're a Bible writer. With those who happened to be there, a group of Epicurean and Stoic philosophers began to debate with him. Some of them asked, "What is this babbler trying to say?" Others remarked, "He seems to be advocating foreign gods." They said this because Paul was preaching the good news about Jesus and the resurrection. Then he took him and brought him into the meeting of Areopagus, where they said to him, "May we know what this new teaching is that you are presenting? You are bringing some strange ideas to our ears, and we would like to know what they mean." All of Athens and the foreigners who lived there spent their time doing nothing but talking about and listening to the latest ideas. I want you to follow Paul's process for how he dealt with this hostile culture. How it is that Paul became relevant. The first thing he did is he reasoned with them. He didn't preach to them. He didn't judge them. He didn't tell them how evil their idols were to start off with. He began to simply lay out logical questions. Have you ever tried to reason with somebody? It doesn't usually begin with you pointing out all the faults. You have to begin to ask questions and listen to answers. You have to begin to reason what's going on. You have to figure out why it is they're doing what they're doing. The idea of reasoning is defined by understanding the reason. So this is what Paul began doing. He began reasoning with them, asking questions, listening, talking about who Jesus is, what the resurrection was. He kept his message small and simple. And the funny thing happened. He got them talking about it. He didn't try to preach his message all over. He got them talking. It came to the point that they said, you know what? What is this guy saying? What is he babbling about, is what they began to say. He said they seemed to be advocating foreign gods. They became curious, and so they went from listening to Paul reasoning with them, they began talking about it amongst themselves. And the funny thing is, well, he got them listening. After they sat there and they talked about these teachings to each other, they came to him and they finally said, "Okay, look, we don't get what you're saying, so why don't you come on in?" He was invited into this culture to say, "Explain to us what it is you're trying to say." They began listening to him. And you know what happened? It became relevant. We have a term in our modern day society to explain what Paul was experiencing. It's called viral. You know what viral is, don't you? You know, they put the video up on YouTube, and the first thing you know, in a couple hours, it's got like a few hundred thousand hits, and we call that going viral. Everybody wants to see it. Everybody wants to hear it. Everybody wants to talk about it, because if you haven't seen it and you haven't heard it, then you can't participate in it. That's what had happened with Paul. Paul had gone around to these places and he had just preached Jesus, just simply talked, just reasoned with them. And now everybody wanted an audience with Paul. He was relevant. Not because of some package that he put on. He was relevant because now they were curious. What does it all mean? They were asking questions of themselves. So Paul began to speak. And I love when Paul speaks, because he speaks very clearly to these people. Paul then stood up in the meeting of Areopagus and said, "People of Athens, I see that in every way you are very religious. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your object of worship, I even found an altar with this inscription to an unknown God. So you are ignorant of the very thing you worship. And this is what I am going to proclaim to you. Now I want you to see when Paul began to speak, even now, look at what he's done. The first thing he did is he viewed them as real people. He didn't get up there and say, sinners of Athens. He didn't get up there saying, pagans of Athens. He didn't get up there giving them any title except for people of Athens. You are people that are asking questions of me, and so I am going to acknowledge you as your real people. It's not an us and them battle. It's a we. We just need to understand that. And then the other thing he did is he acknowledged their desire to know God. He had taken time to go around and not just see the idols, but to read the inscriptions that were written below each and every idol. He became knowledgeable of their culture so that he could have a rational conversation with them. He didn't throw them under the bus for it. He viewed their efforts. It's funny, this would have been a great point to confront these idol things, but what did he say? He said, I see you're religious. I see your religion all around me. I do. There's an idol on every corner. I understand you're looking for something. And then he lowered the boom. This is what he did. He focused on their understanding there had to be something more. The unknown God. The nuns. The people that realize there's got to be more to this world than what I'm seeing. There's got to be more. I'm looking for something. I'm empty. There's a hole there somewhere. Help me fill it. And he saw this idol that they had inscribed to the unknown God. And he said, hey, look, this unknown God that you're looking for, this emptiness you're looking for, that's what I've come here to tell you about. Funny, he related Jesus back to an idol. I don't know if that's good philosophy, do you? But he understood. It was an object lesson. They understood the unknown idol. So I am now going to relate my message to your culture. You see what he's doing? He's being relevant. He's helping us understand. And then he gets his chance to preach. And now he is going to actually give a sermon. The sermon is found in Acts chapter 17, verses 24 through 31, and I am going to read the sermon to you, and then I want to break down his outline, because his outline is incredible. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth, and then does not live in temples built by human hands, and he is not served by human hands if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breathe and everyone else. From one man he made all of the nations, and that should be inhabited the whole earth, and he marked out their appointed times and histories and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out to him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. For in him we live and more have our being. And some of your own poets have said, we are his offering, we are his offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone, an image made by human design and skill. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by man. He appointed, he has given proof of this, everyone, by raising him from the dead. That's his whole sermon. When Paul gets up to actually give the message, you would think he would have taken the time to talk about their culture. But he used his time wisely. He realized that this was a fleeting moment, and he had their attention. God was relevant, and so he was going to lay out exactly what they needed to know. He was going to start with the idea of God. Understand, you know what a God is. I know you do, because look at all the idols you're worshiping. Well, let me tell you about the unknown God. He is God Creator. Funny how he started that. He went all the way back to Genesis and started out with this guy you're looking for, this God you're looking for, this emptiness you're trying to find. It is all about he created you for something. He moves forward and says, you know what, this God you're looking for? He's a God of life. He breathed life into humanity. And not only did he breathe life into humanity, when humanity turned his back on God, he sent his own son to come and die for our sins. Paul's keeping it kind of simple, isn't he? He's sticking to the main points. God creator, God of life, God of love. He loved you enough to sacrifice himself for you. That's the message that Paul put out there in this culture. That kind of sounds like he's watering it down. I mean, when's he going to deal with the sin issue? I mean, when are we going to start tearing down the idols? The funny thing is, Paul never did. As a matter of fact, he went from preaching about God creator, God of life, God of love, then he offered a different perspective. Don't focus on the idols. Don't focus on the outside. Don't focus on the religion. What did he say? What was his one word? Focus on the inside. Repent and return. That's Paul's message. That's the sermon that he gave. With his one swing and all of Athens listening, Paul simply chose to focus on who God is, what God's done for you, and what God is now asking you to do with him. And he was relevant. These people could understand what he was saying. All of the hate and all of the arguments and all of the things that we get into, they were gone because Paul wasn't attacking the culture anymore. He was attacking the inside issue that they had no relationship with this God. But they knew they needed it because they had built an idol for that one too. And I think we can find that in our own culture. You see all those people that have walked away from Christianity. Well, some of them found a new home. They found a new faith. Some of them chose to stop believing in God altogether. Some of them chose to stop believing in the God that you could actually know. But a great majority of the ones that have left Christianity, they've gone nowhere. They're still out there looking for the something more. They want to know, what have you got for me? What is it that makes your God relevant to me? See, they're looking to have the inside filled, not the outside entertained. So I guess what we need to see is, how does this work? Well, the people that were there was reaction to this message. And I need you to see this because we think what's supposed to happen is kind of like Pentecost, right? You know, Peter got up at Pentecost and he delivered this great message. And 3,000 people come running down the aisles. That's how Pentecost worked. That's how the church started. And you would think Paul gives this message and that's what's supposed to happen. But I want you to pay close attention. In the culture Paul finds himself in, this is what it says in verses 32 through 34. When they heard about the resurrection of the dead, some of them sneered. But others said, "We want to hear you again on this subject." At that, Paul left the council. Some of the people became followers of Paul and believed. Among them were Dionysus, I didn't name these people, a member of the Areopagus, and also a woman named Demarius, and the numbers of others. So Paul delivers this message to this culture. And you get it, right? Some rejected it. Some heard this outside message from working on their inside problem, and they just put their fingers in their ears, and they went, la, 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 I don't want to hear this. This is, they sneered. You know what a sneer is, don't you? It's a very angry little look. They're like, what? It's kind of like when you eat broccoli, you sneer. Well, okay, when I eat broccoli, I sneer. Okay, it's something that didn't go down well with them. It didn't set with them. They rejected what he was saying. Some of them were not interested in hearing anymore. They preferred their idols. And you know what? Paul was okay with that. But you know what? Some wanted to hear more. Some of them said, okay, what you're saying has piqued my interest, but I'm not really willing to give my life to Christ yet. I'm not willing to take what you're saying at face value, but I'm not ready to reject it either. Will you stick around and talk to me for a little while? That's relevance. They're not interested in walking away. They're interested in hearing more. Paul now had other opportunities to share because he didn't shut the door. And just so you know, Paul didn't go away empty-handed. Some believed. Some from that very day forward decided, you know what? I now understand who God is. I now understand he's not some little idol sitting on a shelf somewhere. He's not somebody that say, I have to have a physical representation. It is somebody I need to follow with my life. And it says they became believers, even to the point that when Paul went back on the missionary journey, it says they followed with him, so they left their life behind and they went out there too. But that's going inside out. And I want to tell you something. This is a lot harder than standing inside of a glass tower and throwing stones. It is. This is a lot more complicated than sitting there and just trying to tell people you've got problems. Yeah, tell them something they didn't already know. They know they've got problems. This is a lot harder because this is going to take time. Remember that phrase I asked you to underline? Day by day. Paul didn't get to go out and have one big hoo-ha out in the world and let everybody see that what it looks like, and all of a sudden everybody come running and flocking. It says day by day he had to go back into that culture and do it all over again. He had to sit down there and reason with them and listen to them continue to ask questions. Not only did he have to do it when he was inside the area that he was planning on going to, when he went to the marketplace to buy his dinner, there were people there asking questions. And he had to take time to answer them. When he decided to go down to the local movie house, there were people there asking questions day by day everywhere he went because he chose to put a relevant message out there. People began to ask him questions. You know, I think that's why we don't do this a lot of times. It's easy to be on the outside waiting for people to come to us. But look at the numbers. We can build the churches bigger. We can build them shinier. We can go out and do all the stuff that we want. But if you're just going to try to attract people, then you know what? That's not how we're designed. That isn't how Jesus did it. That isn't how the apostles did it. That's not how we're designed to do it. God wants us to turn the church literally inside out. Where we're out there and we're giving the message of Christ to people, plain and simple. Not focused so much on what they're doing wrong, but focused on what we have to fix the problem. You know, I started thinking about the glitter and the gold and the shiny. You know who really used to get with programs these days? Doctor's offices. You've been to a doctor's office recently? They haven't changed much. Okay, sure, they've added some new magazines, and maybe they put a kids area in there for the mom that has to bring a kid with them. But doctor's offices are pretty much the same as they were 20-some years ago. They haven't changed the thing. The seats are still uncomfortable. It still doesn't always smell so good when you go in there. It smells like this antiseptic smell. That they really need to get with the program, right? But have you noticed something? You ever tried to book an appointment with a good doctor? It takes a while, doesn't it? They're always full. Their calendars are full. So why is it that the doctors are able to continue to pull in patients without all the glitter? Because they're healing people. Because they're meeting a basic need that people have. And when that basic need gets met, then they go out and tell their friends that that doctor met my need, and so they go back and do it, and they get other people coming. Well, that's the way the church is supposed to work. We're not supposed to be a factory. We're supposed to be a hospital. We're supposed to be out there meeting people's needs, teaching them what it means to have a relationship with God, so that then we become relevant. But that's inside out. That's a completely different philosophy than what we're used to hearing. And I guess the question we're going to have to ask ourselves, is this the way we want to do it? This is hand-to-hand combat, where it's going to take each and every one of us going out into our world and making a difference. Inside out. We're going to do a time of decision, and this is a big thought process. Because I know, amongst the shock therapy and the numbers that I dumped on you, you're kind of like, oh my gosh, where is he going with this? I know right now, you're thinking, is this what I want to get myself into? I mean, we're talking about something completely new and different, a new philosophy about how we're going to do ministry, not worried necessarily about attracting people to come into a building, but worried about going out into our community and making an impact. That's a big step. That can be a little scary. So during this time of decision, I think you need to do some soul searching and ask yourself, am I ready to make that kind of a step? That kind of commitment for God? You know, maybe you're here today and you're still worshiping the unknown God. You've never met who Jesus really is. But maybe through this sermon, you're starting to ask those questions. Well, if you'd like to have some reasonable answers and have somebody sit down and talk with you about what it means to be a Christian, let me encourage you to come on forward. We'll put you with somebody and they'll sit down and talk to you about what it means to be a Christian. Counsel with you about what it means to be a follower. All of these are decisions that we have to make. I can't make the decision for anybody except for myself. I can live inside out with my life and my life only. You have to choose what you're going to do with yours. Will you please stand and we're going to pray and then we're going to sing.